Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization that more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening. My name is Aspen, and I am an alcoholic.
It made me think of...
Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share... The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by a main speaker. Speakers, please note you will be given 5-minute and 1-minute reminders when it is time to wrap up your talk. Our first 10-minute speaker is Sam M.
Hi, I'm Sam. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 19th, 2020. I have a sponsor, Cara L., and I work the steps. And thank you, Marty, for asking me to do this. It is an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm going to do my best to kind of share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it is like now. So here we go. I grew up in a happy home. I had everything that I could ever need and more. My father was a liquor rep. That didn't make me an alcoholic, but it did mean there was a lot of alcohol around. So it made it easy to access. I actually started stealing his alcohol when I was about 15 years old, and I would sneak out and drive my parents' car around in the middle of the night, pick up my friend, and that's how I learned how to drive at 15 years old. 2 years later, I went to my first concert and had my first taste of hard alcohol, hard liquor, and it was one of the best nights of my life. And I progressed very quickly. By the time I was 18, I was drinking and driving. And I was working at a restaurant where I had managed to find some whiskey that they used for one of the recipes. And I took some of that and kept going back to the freezer to get some more and decided to drive home. And I got a DUI, a felony charge. And I was looking at, possibly some time in jail. And I was on probation. This was a summer before going off to college. And, thankfully I was actually still able to go to college and, was sober, dry for about 6 months in order to avoid going to jail. But as soon as that stopped, as soon as I kind of proved that I seemed to have everything okay, I started drinking and doing other outside issues to make up for the lost time. And so part of what I think makes me an alcoholic is, what alcohol did in terms of making me feel okay. I had never felt okay. I always felt like I needed to be something other than I was. I never felt comfortable in my own skin. I didn't feel like I could speak to people. Like, I didn't think that I could live life as seamlessly as other people seem to do so. I thought that I was, devastatingly and uniquely different. And it was just, this morbid, melancholy thing that I romanticized, of course. And, I didn't really think that I would ever do much with my life. I didn't want to be me. I didn't want to really live. And alcohol got rid of all of that. So needless to say, I sought that whenever I could. And it quickly progressed for me. By the time I was 21, I was a daily drinker. By the time I was 22, I was a daily drunk. And when I was just before I turned 23, I had a family member, my grandmother, pass away. I was her primary caretaker. I was responsible for taking care of her in in-home hospice. And she, moved in with my parents before I was born to take care of me while my parents went to work. So every morning when I woke up, she was my first priority. And then to have her gone, I felt like I had no reason to live. And that's when I drank to essentially die. I welcomed the idea of an alcoholic death. And this was early last year. It got to the point where I was hiding alcohol from, you know, the people I lived with, managing to get it delivered to the house, spending all my money on booze. I lost a job, the fourth job I actually lost to drinking. And, you know, my parents said, you should probably, you know, something needs to be done. And for whatever reason, there was this part of me that knew they were right and that I should probably get some serious help. Part of it was to get them off of my back. Part of it was change in geographic to get out of my environment that I was currently in. And part of it was that I knew that God wanted something better for me. Thank you. So I came out to California for rehab to get sober. And I did the thing. I thought I was just going to stay out here for 45 days and go back home, but I did not. I stayed out here because the recovery and the community that I found out here just seemed to be what I needed. My sobriety date is not my first, it's my fourth. I have relapsed a few times, and I'm grateful I was able to make it back and that I learned from them. You know, I think that it's really hard to come back in and to raise your hand as a newcomer. And if you haven't heard it yet, newcomers, you are the most important person in the room. And I hope that anything that I can say that my higher power has, you know, to use me to speak through to you, you get something out of what I say. And know that if relapse is a part of your story, it doesn't have to be, but if it is, then just stay, you know, and you can have a second chance. And coming from the girl who was too afraid to raise her hand in class to answer questions because I was too afraid of what you thought of me. I didn't want anyone looking at me. I wanted to be invisible. And now I'm speaking to hundreds of people on a Zoom call, which is crazy. Like, I never thought that that would ever happen. And it's a continual process, and I'm going to continue, you know, to grow. And I call sober women every day. The first, you know, one of the first suggestions my sponsor gave to me was to call at least 3 sober alcoholic women every day. And that terrified me. I thought, what am I going to talk to these women about? I don't know. It's going to be awkward. And one of the first women I called, I talked to her on a very frequent basis still to this day. And she has helped me so much. And I am blessed that I, you know, have gone through the difficulties that I have because they have brought me to where I am today. And hopefully, my experience and the adversity that I've gone through can help me to help another person who is newer than I am. You know, I was reading a story in the Big Book, and it was talking about how, like, adversity will introduce you to yourself. And I totally get that. And, you know, doing the steps and looking at my life and my character defects, my resentments, my fears, it is not something I ever wanted to do. I didn't want to get to know myself. It makes me uncomfortable, just like speaking in front of so many people. It makes me uncomfortable. But, you know, I realize I'm uncomfortable most of the time. So if I'm going to be uncomfortable anyway, I might as well be doing something where it's productive and where I'm able to grow and learn and, you know, better myself for it. And so I am so grateful. Thank you so much, Marty, for asking me to come out here and speak. It is an honor to speak in front of all of you guys, and thank you for my life.
Thank you. Our second 10-minute speaker is Stuart A.
Hey, good evening. I'm Stuart Ablaz. I'm an alcoholic. And Aspen, give me a thumbs up if you can hear me. Oh, she ain't giving me a thumbs up, so I hope somebody can hear me. Anyway, my sobriety date is February 4th, 1985. And my sponsor is Kim Jacobson. And the Pacific Group was my home group for many, many years. I have recommitted to start coming back to Wednesday night. I think that was an accident. Thanks, Marty. Thanks, Marty, for asking me to speak tonight. And thank Marty for working the steps in the day with me when I was 12 years sober and saving my life. And thanks, Marty, for getting me to recommit to the Wednesday night meeting. I want to welcome the newcomer if you're new. I want to tell you I'm impressed with you if you're new, because these are some trying times. I don't know if I could have started my sobriety and amassed any length of time under the current crisis that we're in. Zoom is awesome in its own right, but it's just a substitute, hopefully a temporary substitute, before we can get back to regular meetings. What it was like, what happened, what it's like today. I had a very short drinking career and an adolescent drinking career. I drank between the ages of 12 and 18. I got sober when I was 18 years old. I'm third generation alcoholic. My grandparents got sober in the Pacific Group in the 60s, late 60s. I think Mary Ann King is the only one around that remembers when Hank and Lou came to the group. But there may be others that were here when Hank and Lou was there, but Mary Ann's probably the only one that remembers when they actually came around. My uncle got sober in the 70s, and I got sober in the 80s. And, it was just a natural thing for me to come here. I really enjoyed the memorial on Sunday. I did that with, in my living room. And then I, took off with my lovely wife, the wonderful Mary A, and we went to, Paso Robles in my truck, pulling my trailer. And we got to where we were going to stay, and we unhooked the trailer. And I logged in for a secretary's meeting for the Sunday night Ohio meeting where we discussed the upcoming elections, and then I logged into the Sunday night Ohio Street meeting, all on vacation. And then the text came from Marty on Monday, and then I got asked to do this on Tuesday. And I'll tell you, I gave the best talk between 2:45 and 4 a.m. Tuesday night. I'm really not going to try to give you everything of what it was like, everything of what happened, everything what it's like now, because I really want to leave tonight with you understanding that everything in my life that is good, bad, or indifferent, Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to deal with the bad and the indifferent and hang on to the good. I have a lovely wife. I have beautiful daughters. I have a great relationship with my ex-wife. I have all the things that if you're new and you're trying to get sober, you're sitting there on the other end of this Zoom going, what the hell is this guy talking about? That's mildly interesting, but you don't understand. My case is different. My problems are different. And what happened for me was I just came into these rooms and I just emulated all of these men that came before me. I loved seeing everybody who shared at the memorial. Nancy, Sharon, Cindy, Tom. I loved what Tom said. Just take the job. I came into this group. I went to these meetings, and I just took the direction and the advice that the men before me gave me and told me to do. And the AA dream life happened for me. I took a job that I don't know, how or why it was offered to me, but I took the job. And 6 months later, the job turned into a better job. And a year later, that job turned into a better job. And it was a great run. And, I grew up listening to guys like Frank Jones and Harvey Ferguson and all the other veterans in the room. And I wanted to be a Marine, and I didn't know how I was going to do that or how I was going to accomplish that goal. because I pissed off my high school career and didn't get a high school diploma. 5 minutes. Got that. At 28, after successfully ruining my first marriage, right here in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, right here with all of you, Sharon touched on that in her share the other day, the year of her betrayal. Yeah, when I ruined my marriage, I took the opportunity and I enlisted in the United States Marine Corps. And I enlisted for a quick 4 years and I was going to come back and do my own thing. And it turned out to be a 20 and a half year career with the Marines. And I don't know how that happens other than just emulating and following the examples right here in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And to the best of my ability, practicing the principles and of Alcoholics Anonymous in all of my affairs. I am, you know, a progress rather than perfection kind of guy. And there's a lot of people on Zoom right now going, yep, that's him. But I'm living proof, if you're new, that you too can come into these rooms, emulate the men and women before you, do what we do, just get in line and do what we do, go to the yard, go to the moves, go do all the stuff that we can't do right now. But I promise you, when we can do them again, it's going to be great. And, I wanted to be a copper. That happened by happenstance. The Marine Corps, they pushed me back out to the Marine Corps Reserve, and I needed a job. I needed a full-paying job where I could support my lovely wife and my kids. And I applied with the Los Angeles Police Department. And you guys know, because you were all there. I mean, if you're around when it was happening, you saw me go through it, and I did it. And, you know, shout out to Charles K. for reminding me not to go over tonight. And for his mentorship and walking me through that process. Because, you know, he asked me, he said, what are you going to tell them about AA? And I said, I'm not telling them anything about AA. They don't ask about AA. They ask about my drinking and my drug use. And sure enough, they asked me about AA. And that conversation with Charles was just enough so that I could have an answer when they came to me. And the answer wasn't anything more than I'm telling you in my 10-minute talk, only it was a minute and a half version. And they said, put that in writing. And I did. And it's in my package. And it's nothing that I have to hide. And they hired me knowing that I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't drink or use no matter what. And, today I'm just doing the Zoom thing like everybody else. The COVID thing has not slowed my business down. It's work as usual for me, and I got to participate in a drive-by birthday for Charles and Cheryl's daughter, and that, you know, little things like that make it worth going to work. I'll tell you, because it's not easy these days. But I enjoyed the memorial. I've said that twice, three times already. I loved listening to everybody who shares a little bit. I went to lunch with Harvey Ferguson not too long ago, and we were talking about Joe Harnell, because I was having a hard time remembering Joe Harnell's name. And it just amazes me that Harvey can remember everybody and anybody who came through this group in his time and have a story to go along. I get up at 4:30, I'm at work by 6, and I'm home by 4, and I try to be as patient and understanding as I can of the circumstances. Mary hasn't killed the kids, and the kids haven't killed each other, so things are going well here at the house. And my in-laws are in town; they're in the other room. Hence, I'm in the bedroom, the pretty corner with the purses hanging behind me. And I have a good life today, and everything good in my life is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. And anything indifferent and bad, Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to work through it to get to the other end, so that I can either make it good or it's a problem of neglect. I got the 1 minute warning. I want to thank you all for allowing me to share, and I look forward to seeing you here in the future Wednesdays to come. Thanks, Aspen. Go Class 85.
Thanks, Stuart. AA also has a set of...
Hey guys, I'm John C. I'm an alcoholic. good to be here. It's good to see the 25 people on the screen that I can see, and I'm actually really relieved that I'm not in person with the size of the group that I know this is. I have been to your meeting. Cindy C. is my sponsor, and my sobriety date is May 3rd, 1989. My home group is Between the Covers. It's a big book study in Chicago. All are welcome. And I was out there when Cindy was celebrating 30 years, and my sponsor at the time was Julie C., who was also a number member of this group. And I have a lot of respect for this specific meeting, and I want to thank Marty for asking me to give a lead, and thank Sam and Stuart for their comments as well. I was born in the state of New Mexico, and my birth mother had already had five children. I was the fifth. And all of them were out of wedlock, and she couldn't do one more. And I was sober a period, a couple of years later, I figured out on her death certificate, it says barmaid. And she died at age 39, and I would have been 4 years old. So I'm really grateful for her for giving me up. I don't know if alcoholism had any reason for me to be here, but if you have five kids, and I think there's some alcohol in there. So in my story, I wanted to know what my alcoholic family looked like. And I suspect that she had alcoholism. I don't know that, but I got adopted into a family that wanted to have kids really bad. And I was the first kid, and they just loved me up. And I was pampered, treated well, and fed and taken care of. And I don't know, I had a good time. I was into all the fun things, and something happened. I don't know when it was, but I think it was the first time I saw a guy walk down the street with his shirt off. And I was like, huh, I don't think I'm like everyone else. And it was a small town. And I was like, I'm a little different. And it wasn't alcoholism, but I understand later on there's also alcoholism. And I went off to prep school. I came out of the closet in prep school. I called my mom, told her I was out, and sent her a letter. And she did not handle it well. And she said it would have been easier on her emotionally if the school had called and said I had committed suicide. And I was 13. And that is not something that when you're 13 years old, you should hear from your mother. And I was devastated, and alcohol was in the background. I wasn't doing alcohol drinking yet. And my first drinks of alcohol were really with my dad, or when we were doing, you know, mowing the lawn or doing something. But I was off at prep school, and things changed. I wasn't able to get to alcohol quickly for a few years, but I was out of the closet, and I was mid-80s and early 80s. And my parents did not know what to do with me. I was from a small town. Everyone knew who my father was. He had no ability to handle a gay child. And at, I want to say 16 or 17, they said, we have an apartment in Denver, and we're going to suggest that you spend your summers there. And unescorted, unsupervised, yay, I went to Denver, Colorado, and said, this is fantastic news for me, because I thought, well, what more would a teenager want than unsupervised time? And I loved it. I fell in love with a big city. I wanted to get to New York. I couldn't get to New York fast enough, but I got to Denver. And there I met my first member of Alcoholics Anonymous. His name was David. And I didn't meet David at an AA meeting. I met him at a gay men's support group. This was the 80s. We didn't have the rights that we have today. And you know, we were all just, you know, whatever. anyway, I met David, and David was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was sober about 8 years. And I was a teenager, and the very first night we met, I ordered a hot fudge sundae and a Michelob, and he thought, "You are new at this drinking thing, aren't you, kid?" And I was. I was just new at drinking. And a hot fudge sundae and a Michelob is about what I was like, you know, at that age. And drinking just was a lot of fun. I enjoyed everything there was about drinking. I loved the smell of the bar. I loved the fun of the disco. I loved the dancing. I love all of that about alcohol. And I graduated from high school. I went to Washington, D.C. for college. And in D.C. at the time, you could drink whatever you wanted at age 18. And I was like, this is heaven. So my time in college, my first couple of years, were spent more off campus than on campus. And I was dutifully dragging guys out of the closet at the time, taking them down to the gay bar and introducing them to the wonderful world of drinking and and gay life. And, you know, it was a good time. I had my first blackout in college. I was out with a buddy. We were out drinking and we had had so much to drink. We fell down on the sidewalk afterwards. And the next thing I remember, I was waking up in my dorm room. And at the time, I drove a 3/4 ton pickup with a propane tank about 75 gallons on the back, and I was driving through the streets of Washington, D.C. completely blacked out. And I did not know that's what it was called. I know I didn't want to talk to you about that, but I woke up that next morning and I looked outside my dorm room and I thought, the truck's there. I'm okay. I'm in one piece. Don't talk about this. And, you know, my drinking just continued to be fun with like little bitty blackouts. And David, who was qualifying for Al-Anon, would be a good friend. And we'd go out drinking and he would drive home after I was out at the bar. So I loved having a member of AA as my buddy. And he would go to AA meetings and we'd be friends and he'd go off to a meeting. I'd go out and do whatever. And I just really think of him as my Ebby. And I'm so grateful to have met him. And I'm going to fast forward. I got to college. College was a lot of fun. I found myself in Providence, Rhode Island. I had an art focus. I went to Rhode Island School of Design and I ended up there finding a group of guys who were just like me. We drank the same. We hung out the same. We knew which bars to be at every night of the week. And we had a good time. And then I met him. I had always been piped in my head this idea that, you know, someday your prince will come. The women in the room will identify, the men may not. But there's always this idea, like, someday your prince will come. And I was having a drinking party, and this guy was invited over, and his name was Lenny. And Lenny looked like a movie star, and he was as sweet as could be, and wholesome, and I just completely fell head over heels. And I am so grateful for that. We ended up dating and something happened, which is that he did not drink like I drank. And he was the first person when we would go out, he counted my drinks. And we were out one night, I don't know, we're probably dating 4 or 5 months, somewhere in there. And he said, "John, that is your 7th gin and tonic." And I remember that line specifically because I thought, why are you counting my drinks? And how annoying is that? So he wanted me home by 11 o'clock at night. I found that to be kind of a drag. If you're like me, like alcohol and drinking and college and boyfriend and all that's great. But if you're going to ask me to be home by 11 o'clock at night, that's a really reasonable request when you're sober. And it's a reasonable response to say, sure, honey, I'll be home by 11 o'clock at night. And what I would do is I'd go out to the bar to have one drink and I would start drinking, and I did not know I had alcoholism. What would happen is I would start drinking, and somehow 10 o'clock would roll around, 11 o'clock would roll around, and I could not leave the bar. And I would come home after the bar closed about 2 in the morning, and he would greet me in that certain sort of way that you greet the drunk at the door. And I was there in all my glory of just being drunk and him wondering where I had been. And I thought, I was drinking and I wasn't going to leave until the bar closed. And I didn't understand why there was a problem with this. And we got into this fight, and I don't know who threw what, a shoe, a fist. And then I slapped him across the face and I said, don't ever bring violence into this house again. And I was drunk and I was insane. And those are the kinds of things that I have to keep in my head, because sometimes I think, wow, I wasn't that insane. And that is a very clear picture of alcoholic insanity. And I'll tell you what happened is I chose alcohol over Lenny. I broke up with Lenny. I would get drunk, and there's nothing better than alcoholism, or for me, being drunk and having that remorseful, sad, wanting to have them back. And I would show him I loved him by doing wheelies in the big donuts in the parking lot, drunk about 2 in the morning. And, I was just crazy. Don't you know that I love you? I'm doing donuts in the parking lot at 2 in the morning to show you. Oh, so I chose alcohol over relationship. I moved into my own place. No one else was going to bother me. I could drink the way I wanted. I started buying gin and bringing it back to my apartment, and I could not keep it in. I couldn't keep the bottle full for longer than 3 days. And then it started to be less and less. And I didn't know I had alcoholism. I wanted to have a normal life, and I would have this remorseful part about a relationship. I ended up at an internship in my last year of college in Seattle, Washington. And in Seattle, I was there for 6 weeks. I was asked to show up Monday through Friday at 8 a.m., normal working hours. And I would start at the bar on Sunday evening at happy hour. And I was a senior in college, and I'd go to the bar and I'd think this was a great thing. And I once again could not stop drinking in order to be home, to have a reasonable amount of sleep, to show up at work the next day. And David, my friend David, who was a member of AA, had given me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous over our history and said, one day you may need this. And I'm so grateful he did. In Seattle, I continued to go out for happy hour on Sunday nights, and I would drink, and I would be too drunk to get home, and I'd find some place to pull over and to sober up and then try to make it back across these bridges in the dead of winter. And anyway, I called in sick every morning, every Monday morning for that internship for 6 weeks. And I could see, like, okay, I've lost the relationship. I'm going to lose my job. And this was kind of percolating in the back of my head. And I wasn't thinking about let's go join Alcoholics Anonymous. That was not on my radar. It was more like, I'm doing stuff that I know better. I know how to be a good person. And yet I'm getting drunk. I'm choosing actions that don't match with who I am. And I can't reconcile what's going on in my body. And my parents gave me a big carrot to graduate from college. It's always a good idea when you have kids. And my parents said, here's a big load of cash. And if you finish college, you get it. And my parents deposited it a little too early. And I had the opportunity to finish up my schoolwork, had a big bag of cash and nothing to do. And I drank and I drank and I drank every night of the week. And the last probably month of my drinking, I was at the bar every night. And I was no longer in the disco. I was no longer looking for my fellow college students in the bar. And I was alone, often on a Monday night at a leather bar in Providence, Rhode Island, closing the bar and doing the thing that we often do, which is try to find companionship after the bar closes and struggling to get home, hopefully before the sun came up, because there's nothing worse than being drunk all night and then having that sun come up. And my last drunk was on May 2nd, 1989. And I had reached the end for me. And my last drunk was, it was a Monday night, and I passed out in a space, and somebody rapped on the door and asked if I was okay. And I'm not going to say I'm not okay. And I'm driving home in a small college town at 2 a.m. just blasted out of my mind with the window rolled down, trying to get some air so I can breathe and see the road. And it was often during these moments, I would think, if I go fast enough, and if I hit the middle of the bridge, it will look like an accident. When Bill talks about making that ultimate sacrifice, I think about how many times I had suicidal ideas floating through my mind while drunk and trying to make it home and thinking, if I could just do this differently. And I got home that night and I had been sick. I rolled down the window. I threw up down the side of my pickup truck. I wasn't going to stop. And I slept in the next morning, and I remember David had given me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew exactly where that book was in my possession. And I took it down off the shelf and I read it. And I thought, okay, this is where you gotta go. And I'm a gay boy in a college town, and I am looking for a gay meeting because I am not going to go to a regular meeting. I was like, I'm going to a gay meeting. I need to find my people. And that night, the first meeting that I could get to was in Boston. It was a group called Crossroads. And I showed up there, as I did as a newcomer, with just freshly showered, hoping that you didn't notice that I was still not sure of myself. And three guys showed up and said, "You look new." And I was like, okay, yeah. And luckily, they did what we do here. They just grabbed me by the arm, wrapped their hand around my shoulder, and said, come sit with us. You don't have to know anything about this meeting. You don't have to do anything. Just come sit with us. And that's what I did. And that is my first AA meeting. I had been drunk that night, so I count the next day as my first day sober. And that was May 3rd, 1989. And I have not had a drink or a drug since. So, sobriety. I was newly sober. Showed back up to Providence, Rhode Island for my second meeting, which is perhaps the most important meeting after the first. And I found a group of guys who said, come sit with us. And most importantly, they said, after this meeting, why don't you join us and we're going to go out for coffee. and dessert. And they did that for the next 30 days. And I went to meetings with them and continued to do what we do here. And I wasn't sure I wanted to be called an alcoholic. I wasn't sure that I liked the word. It didn't fall out of my mouth easily. But there was something here. And they would say things like, "Why don't you just not drink tonight?" And I would be able to handle this idea of let's just today, 24 hours, let's break it down just one day at a time. And I thought, okay, I can do that. I cannot drink today. And I graduated from college. I went down to Washington, D.C., where David, a member of AA, lived, and he had an extra room. And I started my early sobriety with a member, and I was a newcomer right under somebody who had some time. And I was such a sponge. I ended up there, and I went to a place called Whitman Walker Alcoholism Services. It was an outpatient program where I met people who would say things like, "Grab your seat, look to your left, and look to your right. Neither of those individuals will be here in a year." And it kind of woke me up. I was like, wow, this thing is serious. And my counselor at the time, a gentleman named Bill T, he would talk about his drinking, and he would talk about blackouts, and he would talk about going to work and being blacked out. And his job was air traffic controller. So it stuck. Like, I got this. I was like, that is not the job you want to be blacked out at, you know? And then he would talk about the pilots who are also blacked out landing planes. And I could talk about my blackouts for the first time and understand what they were. And I could see, like, I have alcoholism. Once I start drinking, my body wants more. And it just, I did not know that when I was drinking. And this mental obsession that always brings me back to the first drink. And my early years in Washington, D.C., I fell in with a group of guys. They were my litter mates. There was Todd and Michael and so many. And we just got sober together. And at that time, it was the late 80s. And AIDS was in full force, and members were dying, and we were burying people after meetings, and there would be memorial services, and the quilt showed up, and things were happening in AA that I was just like, I was just being dragged along. I was like, okay, this is what we're doing. We're burying Nathaniel. And we were staying sober. And I had my first sponsor, Donald. My first real sponsor was Donald, and I'm not sure if you're like this. I don't want just any sponsor. I'm kind of got a big ego. I want a rock star sponsor. I want somebody who's like knocking the ball out of the ballpark all the time in AA. And Donald was my first. And Donald sponsored me my first year. We had competitive sobriety. We got together with some of those that he sponsored, and we saw who could finish the fourth step first. And just, oh my gosh, everything that was really so important in that first year of sobriety. And I had another sponsor, RJ, who sponsored me from my second year through 12. And I was about 3 years sober in AA, going to meetings, sponsoring people, and something happened. I was looking good in AA. And when you look good in AA, like I was feeling, you don't want to tell somebody that you want to drink. And for me, I was getting to this point where, like, I'm in an AA meeting and I want to drink, but I don't want to tell you. And that is such a dangerous place to be. And I finally just said it out loud. I want to drink. And in AA, that medicine, by just coming into AA and saying out loud that I want to drink, something happened I found for the first time, I was like, it moved through me in AA, and I did not drink that day. And I was about 3 years sober. And I continue to find that to be a huge lesson. Like, get it out before you go out. Tell somebody. Talk about it in a meeting. And today, I still find that if alcohol gets in my brain, I see an ad, I see some sort of thing, I will share about it in a meeting because it gets kind of back here. DC years were fantastic. I will tell you, my fifth step in my fifth year was really important. I was sober long enough to know what I was kind of doing, but kind of not doing. And I did a fifth step with a man who helped me see that I would have this thing about alcoholism that I didn't understand. I thought alcoholism was really just the drinking. And what I really understand today is that I have this brain that is not wired correctly. And I will look for the thing that you cannot give me and ask you to give it to me. And it was a case with, I had fallen in love with a straight man who worked for me, and I didn't know that was going to happen. And I eavesdropped on a conversation, and all of my employees quit, which is, you know, a really awesome thing to do in your fifth year of sobriety. Like, just, you know, really totally hit the wall. But what happened is I went back through my fourth step and fifth step. And what I really found is, like, I have this wicked brain that will ask for the one thing you can't give me and then dismiss you for not being able to do that. I moved to Chicago in 2001. And I was about 12 years sober, and I was looking around for a new sponsor. And Chicago was very different. It was a completely different world for me in AA, and moving with a partner. Let me stop there. At 8 years of sobriety, I had a firm going. I had about 20 some employees. I thought, if you can staff an office, you can staff a husband. What's the problem? You know, it's resumes. Let's go. So I started looking for a relationship, and I was like, I had it going on. I had 200 plus folders looking for a husband. I'm like, okay, you know, you want to get serious about a relationship? Let's go put the work into it, John. And I did. And I said, okay, let's go. And I ended up, this is dial up. This is AOL. I met this guy. His screen name was one that made me think he wasn't, you know, anyway. It turns out we dated through the phone for about a month. And then he showed up, and he had all the right stuff on the inside. And then he showed up in person, and not quite all the boxes were checked on the outside. And I had been sober in AA long enough that you guys stepped in and said to me, don't throw him away. Don't do that. Don't do the thing that alcoholics do, which is to trash it. And I said, okay, give him a good time. Show him Washington, D.C. Frank and I have been together ever since. AA has raised me. AA has been my blanket for life. I have found that you guys know what you're talking about when I don't. And that very first night that we had our very first date in person, Princess Di was killed. And that's our anniversary date. It's kind of a very big date to remember. And so I have been together with the same man for 23 years. We moved to Chicago, got here, found a new sponsor, and went through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had not done that before. I'd been sponsored out of the 12 and 12. And this idea of going through a big book with one person, one page at a time, one paragraph at a time, one sentence at a time, was completely new to me. and it completely revolutionized my sobriety. I was asked to be new without taking a drink at 12 years of sobriety. And I thought, okay, that sounds like a something I can try. Thank you. I will tell you, the process of sponsoring someone and being sponsored has been something that has completely cracked me open. I was a very I would not cry. I would not break into any emotion in my early years of sobriety. And AA has kind of cracked my heart open in a way that I did not anticipate. I sponsor people today, and it is in the process that AA has given me of having a sponsor and sponsoring someone that in that process, AA changed my heart. And this journey that there is in AA from AA here down to AA here is sometimes a really long road, but really happens for me when I started working with others in a way that was different. Oh gosh, I think I might have been with Frank. We were together about 10 years, and one of the things I was always envious of was other people who had families. And Frank and I decided that we would start a family. And in 2007, our son was born, Brandon, and we had been just really, both of us had wanted to have children and raising children. Alan in this group, thank you, Alan, was such a great like road post, because I knew I turned to Alan. I mean, like in AA, I have found everything I need to help me. And Alan was there, and he was like, yeah, pointing me in the right direction. Julie and Cindy both helped me in my process. And I got to tell you, I love my sponsors. I have an amazing life today. It is not always perfect, and I am not always perfect, but I'm 31 years sober. I know what AA has done for me. It has raised me to be a man. And my father passed away about a year and a half ago. We did not have the best relationship. He did not know how to raise a gay son. He was a Texas raised man and had some very strong ideas about things. And we would battle. And at the end, everything that needed to be said was said. I loved him. And I was able to carry his ashes down the aisle and put him in his grave. And that was because of AA. I would call Cindy and I would say, funeral's today. I'm carrying his ashes. And I'd be like, I don't know how I'm doing this. And you guys have been with me every step of the way. And I don't know what's next. I think this is what's so fun is I'm sober 31 years. And I feel like I look at Clancy and I think, wow, 62. I'm only halfway there. What could possibly happen in my future? What does AA look like for me now? And I'm excited. I had somebody ask me to sponsor them today. And I'm like, you know what? That's where in my book, this works. And I'm getting the beep. So I think that's my time. Thank you all so much.
A birthdays at this meeting. We define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, or anything that which affects you from the neck up. If your regular attendee of this meeting would like to take a cake with us, please email our scribe Ann P at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ann. I'm an alcoholic. Don't forget your sponsor and don't forget your sobriety date, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Please do this by 6:30. Otherwise, you'll have to wait until the following week to get recognized. We have several birthdays tonight. And tonight, we've asked somebody special to come in and do our birthday song.
Hi, everybody. Malik Alcoholic. Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Sweet. Please contribute to Venmo. That cost us a lot of money. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on your birthday. At the end of the year, this is our money contribution to AA organizations worldwide. If you wish to participate in this custom, please email our treasurer, Betty H., at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org. And tonight, our birthdays are...
They're up there, Marty. Are you not seeing them?
Oh, I got them. Thank you.
Okay.
Sure. Well, they went away. They keep going away. Georgia, can you do it for me, please?
You bet. Glennis H. is celebrating 1 year, and her sponsor is Cara L. Happy birthday. Jeremy H. is celebrating 2 years, and Dave G. is his sponsor. Logan H. is celebrating 7 years, and Tom B. is his sponsor. Carlos R. is celebrating 10 years, and Charles K. is his sponsor. Julie W., our first lady, is celebrating 12 years, and Lydia W. is her sponsor. Nancy G. is celebrating 13 years, and Bob F. is her sponsor. Robert A. is celebrating 34 years, and Tom B. is his sponsor. Kenna F. is celebrating 35 years, and she's a former secretary, and Nancy M. is her sponsor. Happy birthday, Kenna. That is a total of 8 birthdays for 114 years, which makes an average of 14.24 years. Happy birthday, everyone.
Thank you, Georgia. Thanks for covering me. Underneath special announcement.